Hello, Soul Family, and welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. My name is Aishwarya. I am a mystic, healer, coach, and music artist. We are walking into a pivotal golden age on Earth, and it's time to cultivate the art and science of elevating your consciousness to extraordinary levels. Imagine having the most profound relationships, tapping into your divine guidance, embracing your true soul design, and unlocking supernatural abundance through your innate gifts. Those are the conversations we will be having twice a week, every Wednesday and Thursday, and we will have episodes that will nourish your spirit and expand your horizons. Don't forget to subscribe and become a part of our ever-growing soul family, and expect to meet incredible guests who will bring their unique wisdom and experiences to the table. And on other episodes, it will just be me and you. Remember, you're more than a listener to me. You are family. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. Today, I have a really special guest, Dana Casperson. She is a conflict engagement specialist, award-winning performing artist, and author working with individuals, groups, and communities worldwide. Her book, Changing the Conversation, The 17 Principles of Conflict Resolution, a juiced Elfer's book, has been translated into 8 languages and is used internationally as a training tool by organizations, schools, and individuals. In her work, integrating conflict engagement strategies with choreographic design, she has created and realized teaching and communication methods and large-scale public dialogue models, bringing together thousands of people from diverse communities across the world. As a leading collaborator of acclaimed choreographer William Forsythe for over 30 years, Dana has co-created and performed across the world as a principal artist with the Ballet Frankfurt and the Forsythe Company. Dana has received the Bessie Award for Outstanding Creative Achievement in the United States and was nominated for the Laurence Olivier Award for Outstanding Achievement in England. Dana, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here with you.
It's so great to have you. And that's some really amazing and impressive achievements that you've got in your bio. And what I find fascinating is that you've tied the, like, you know, conflict resolution, but with also your artistic background.
Yeah, because the world, the practice inside the world of dance practitioners, let's say, has so much possibility and is so much about translation and transformation that at first I tried to really keep them separate, but eventually I realized I had really just thrown the baby out with the bathwater, and that all of those practices are really helpful inside of other places that can feel confusing or stuck or really overwhelming. So the more I bring those in, the better I find.
Wow. And, you know, it's because obviously today we are going to be talking about your book and like changing the conversation, the 17 principles of conflict resolution. And I know conflict is a topic for many to work through in a way that feels authentic to them. So that is what we're going to talk about today and how conflict is an opportunity. But first, I want to ask you, you know, obviously you were like a performer and doing all of this artistic dance and everything, ballet. So how did you, what inspired you to go into the direction of conflict? I know you spoke a little bit about it, but just go deep.
Yeah, you know what? At a certain point in my life, there was so much conflict and it was so, I was handling it so badly and I was so stressed out and I could see people around me stressed out. And a friend of mine dragged me to a workshop of Marshall Rosenberg, who started nonviolent communication. I had this really like a epiphany moment where I suddenly couldn't speak because I've just had this sense like, it does not have to be this way. And I started then really kind of out of self-defense, studying for myself and thinking, okay, what am I doing? What else might I do? And the more I saw how things unfold, the more I got into it, and I eventually went and got a degree in mediation and conflict studies and mediation, And I just find it so exciting to see how places that feel impossible become places of possibility, depending on the kind of practice we have internally and with each other. So I got into it because I hated conflict, essentially.
Yeah, and I resonate with that because I definitely used to be one of those people. But now I see how it is an opportunity, if done correctly, for just like that in deeper intimacy, you know, with whoever we're in conflict with, like deeper understanding, expanding our awareness, all of that kind of stuff. So it's really important. So I wanted to ask you, you know, because before the podcast interview, I mentioned a few groups of people that I think people fall into when, in regards to conflict. So the first one I want to ask about is the people who just don't really want to be in that situation of conflict. It makes them feel uncomfortable. They want to like get to the other side of it as soon as possible. They want to like avoid it at all costs and just not want to feel all these emotions around it. What could you say about people who are experiencing that kind of feeling?
Yeah. So it's very common because it can be really scary and overwhelming inside of conflict. And what I've found is that what can be really helpful overall, like we were talking about a bit before, with all the kind of styles and habits we have around conflict, is to recognize that everybody gets into a conflict because they care about something. So nobody's in a conflict for any other reason. Deep down, there's always something that matters to somebody. And so where we put our attention often determines what other people come up to meet. So if we are, you know, avoiding conflict and kind of simmering internally, that still comes across. So we're never not in some kind of an approach to conflict. And I think that can be also empowering to recognize. It's not like we have to think, okay, do I want to learn how to do conflict resolution? It's more that we can recognize, okay, what am I currently doing? What's the impact of that? And I avoid conflict. What tends to be the outcome? And to think, okay, all right, this is scary, but what if I just shift my attention down to the level of what really matters to me? And I develop like a really strong curiosity about the other person, even when I disagree with them or I don't feel curious about them, develop a really robust curiosity that's asking, okay, what does this person need? What is it that they really want? And what does it look like if I approach instead the whole thing on the level of what matters to people, what they want and what they need? And the question then can be, you know, given what we each, what it matters to each of us, what might it look like to move forward, which is different than, oh my God, what's wrong with this person? I can't deal with them. So our internal approach can also give us ease to say, all right, you know, I don't enjoy this particularly, but I can also recognize that this is a place where something matters to everybody. And I can direct my attention and my curiosity and my questions toward trying to understand what's going on so that the conversation is informed by what matters instead of the level of what I would call strategies. This should happen. No, this should happen, which is often where we get stuck in a conflict. So I think to the person who feels afraid, to take a step back, connect to yourself, connect to what matters to you, articulate that for yourself, consciously practice, you know, in low scale, low level situations, practice being curious about what matters to other people too. And being able to ask simple questions like, you know, I really want to get a sense of what matters to you here. What's the most important thing to you? Because everybody in a conflict is not only in a conflict because something matters to them, but they want it to be heard. So if they get the sense that your intention is really to listen and to understand, then they're much more likely to kind of take it down a level and talk about that.
I love that. And it really made me have a lot of aha moments and it also got me reflecting on when I used to not like conflict and why that was, is because I think I was, as a child and stuff like that, it was like conflict was presented as quite threatening or dominating or just my way or the highway, you know, possibly other people can relate to this, maybe by a parental figure, maybe in school, maybe in the education system, where it was like that hierarchical dominant kind of conflict, and you had to just listen. And then now what you're talking about is, you know, two people being able to both be heard, both listen, and getting to the core of what each person needs and what's really going on beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to what you also bring up a really important point, which is sometimes people are in these super hierarchical positions where it feels like there's no emotion possible. And what this idea of coming to the level of what matters can be really important there too, because if, you know, say you do find yourself with someone who is not willing to listen in a hierarchy where you don't have much power, to recognize that it's possible to unpack power. It's not a monolith. And so your internal ability to shift your attention is already one kind of power, to say, okay, what matters to me here? If I'm not able to meet my needs in this particular situation, that need is still in me. And how can that find expression in other ways so that I'm not reliant on one person or one situation for my own internal well-being? So I think that is, those two things are really important. One is that everybody is in a conflict because something matters, and it matters on all levels of hierarchy as well. And at the same time, there's always the question of what's my decision now, given what this person has decided. And it all comes back to, okay, what matters to me? What matters to the people around me? What's happening in the situation? And what does that mean about what's possible? That kind of curiosity around what might this look like if... You know,
I love that curiosity, because it's kind of like leaving space for just new possibilities that maybe we haven't seen in other people or we haven't heard of. Like, we can actually come up with ways of being and ways of interacting that, you know, we haven't seen before by giving space. And it leads me on to the question of people who, yeah, like they almost don't want to share their true need or listen to the other person's true need. Number one, maybe because they're not in touch with what their need is. Or maybe they feel they can't fulfill the other person's need, so they'd rather just not say it and just like try and appease conflict in the moment by just agreeing with the other person. Or just completely just cut the connection just because they just don't want to. For them, in their heads, it's like, I'd rather just run than have this uncomfortable moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that comes to what I think was your second type of habit and conflict, which had to do with emotional, wasn't it? What was your second?
My second was people, the overreaction and the defensiveness and the maybe nervous system dysregulation, because conflict is just so scary.
I hope that you are loving this episode, and I wanted to just take a quick minute to give you something super exciting, a free ticket to the 25-day Finally Feel Free virtual retreat. This is not an ordinary event, it is a sacred global sanctuary designed to support, elevate, and celebrate your unique journey. Me and over 50 visionary speakers will be diving into the realms of quantum health and wellness, unlocking wealth through your natural gifts, exploring a new form of divine love, and elevating to higher states of consciousness to create and experience your soul destiny. Don't miss this beautiful opportunity. Sign up. The link is in the show notes below. And now back to our episode.
Yeah. And I think that comes to what you were just talking about there, which is that when emotion emerges, it can feel overwhelming, and people can be like, I just can't deal with this and I can't deal with them. And what I'm finding is that emotion, oftentimes, either, as you say, either people act it out in a really destructive way and just kind of circle inside of it, or they suppress it. And I see emotion as, it's like needs and interests, let's say interests being what you generally want, are down there kind of with a flag that is emotion, waving the emotion flag. So the emotion's like a big signal to us. And it can be a really helpful place to start. Like you say, when people think, I can't even name my needs. God knows what their need is. But we can start at the level of emotion and say, okay, Ooh, I'm so furious right now, or I'm so sad, or I'm because emotions, we feel them, we know what they are. Yeah. And we can then say, okay, what is it below that? That can help us guide us down to the level of what matters. What is it? What is that fury in relationship to? What do I want on a deeper level, so that we can let the emotion be not like this overwhelming storm that is in itself an end, but rather have it be the signal that lets us go down deeper, so that we can say, okay, let me get back down to this level of what matters. Like you say, regulating. So emotion doesn't need to be, it's part of the way we think. So it's there for a reason again. And when people find themselves either being afraid to step in because they think they'll be overwhelmed by the emotion, or they think they'll be overwhelmed by the other person's emotion, that a lot of the work that can be really helpful is to do in advance. To get used to asking yourself those questions, because it takes a while to get used to it. If you're not used to asking, what is it that, what am I feeling? Like an emotion, like sadness, happiness, fear. And then thinking about needs, and in doing that in quiet spaces. So you get used to asking that questions and searching for it, and getting used to being able to get your brain focused on that level for other people as well in advance, so that you have those cognitive habits. When you find yourself stressed, it's easier to come to the place of asking, all right, ooh, what is it that this person cares about? Being available internally in yourself to be able to ask that question of the other person. So seeing emotion not as a problem, but as a guide that's not an end in itself, but is a pathway to help us understand what matters.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And another thing I was wondering about as well, because in this culture of like spirituality, and like, I think mainly spirituality more than the self-improvement group, there is this misconception of like, you just need to let it go and, you know, love and light and peace and love and all of that. And that can come across when it comes to conflict as kind of saying, oh, okay, you know what? I'm just going to rise above it. I'm not going to react. I'm going to just let it go. And then, which I think some things you can do if you feel like the other person's just having a bad day and there's nothing truly coming up for you that's important for you and you just want to hold space. I agree with that. But sometimes what can happen is you're just like dismissing it, thinking you're acting in an evolved way. And then one day it just is like too much stuff brushed under the carpet and you just kind of explode. What do we do with that?
So I think recognizing that, that like, conflict.
Maybe we're focusing on bigger conflicts. What about the smaller conflicts? Like, do we let them go, or do we address, like, do we try and nip things in the bud?
So I think the practice of practicing in advance also has to do with noticing when there's miscommunications or, places where you're not having coherence with somebody else. And being able to name it in a way in advance that's not a problem, but is about normalizing conflict. So conflict not as an aberration. Conflict is not a failure. It's not a spiritual failure. It's a practice of recognizing what's happening, what people need, and the level of needs. And I think this is something that I know this helped me, and I think other people have found it helpful too, is that needs are not about being needy. They're these deep drivers that are fundamental to all of us, and they're beautiful. Like the need for belonging, the need for contribution, the need for safety, all of these things are like shining energies inside of us that speak when they're not being met. And so the fact that we have needs is not a problem. The fact that other people have needs is not a problem. In fact, it's how we connect on a human level that these things that matter to us, that are like these energetic drivers. And when we get used to recognizing them and noticing that a conflict is coming up, then it's not about like, oh God, there's a conflict, we messed up. And, you know, obviously we're not evolved and we should really go back and meditate more, but rather to say, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah.
What are the needs that are under here? How can we make life better for ourselves and for each other through the way that we communicate about what matters and what's getting in the way of what matters. So that those things are not a problem, but we normalize it so that we can continue to unfold our capacity to be with each other in constructive ways and to build communities that are constructive and can contain conflict as something that can help us better understand what matters, get things on the table, use that energy to have the conversations, which are not always easy. And then to ask that curious question, like we talked about, okay, so given that this matters to you, this matters to me, what's the question between us? Mm-hmm. And what might it look like if we thought about how we move forward in ways that meet needs on enough on all sides?
Yeah, I love that you said conflict is not a failure, because I think when people have grown up in households where conflict comes when you're perceived to have done something wrong or you've made a mistake, and then people can make that association that, oh no, I messed up because now when someone's angry at me, someone's not happy with me. So I love, love, love that you said conflict is not failure. It's actually an inevitable part of life. Like we're never gonna be able to avoid it. And the other thing that I wanted,
I was just gonna say that it also helps us understand each other. Because oftentimes those deeper needs and interests ride along without being spoken. And so when they emerge in a conflict, it's an opportunity to say, okay, there's something I haven't understood yet. What is it in you that's important right now?
Yeah. And I think also, you know, talking about needs, like sometimes we judge our own needs. We haven't even accepted our own needs to ourselves. Like we have the need and we haven't admitted it, or we think we, you know, who am I to have that need? Or just so much around just having that need that it feels almost scary to now say it to another person because you yourself haven't accepted that in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I was to give an example, you know, maybe just two people are in a relationship and one person feels, maybe just, let's just say the woman made a choice to stay at home with the kids. I've seen this kind of scenario in clients before. And then now she's like, you know, I want to actually go back to my career, but she's judging herself for that decision. She doesn't know how to get from there to now confidently expressing that to her partner because she herself hasn't integrated that need.
Yeah. And I think it can be helpful, for example, in that scenario, to notice the difference between a strategy, an interest, and a need. So for example, what you just named, I want to go back to work as a strategy. Under that might be a generalized interest to, I'd like to be able to work in the fields that interest me and be in connection with other professionals and have a balance in my work life. Under that might be deeper needs for contribution, meaning, belonging. And it can be, if you take it down deeper levels, then there's really no conflict. Like needs are never in conflict with each other, people's needs. So her need for contribution and for meaning aren't in conflict with the needs that lie under the having children, for example. So then if the question can expand to be like, okay, I'm finding that my needs for, you know, whatever the needs are that are being met by having children and being at home are being met. And at the same time, I have these other needs. So I'm wondering what it would look like if I, you know, organized my life in a way that I could move also toward those, the contribution and meaning in terms of the field in which I've worked. So then it becomes less about like, should I go back to work? But more about a broader question that you can talk about with your partner. You know, I'm noticing I have this need to contribute in a particular way. And I would love to be able to build that into our life. And so that it's not like I'm now giving up on the children and my needs. But rather, how does the richness of my life and the richness of my spirit that's being expressed by these needs I feel coming up, how can those be, you know, illuminated? And how can my partner help me in that motion toward illuminating those needs. So it's not about taking something away from anybody, but about expanding your understanding of yourself.
Yeah, because the thing is, needs change. And I think what I can, I've witnessed in conflict or even been in that situation is sometimes when needs do change, and then the other person will be like, but you said this and you said that, and that's what we've stuck to. And it can be quite difficult because that person could feel like they've honored a particular need you had in the past, but now your needs have changed. And then they're a bit like, well, where am I, you know, fitting with this?
Right. Why did I do all that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's like such a great point that, and it gets back to what we were talking about before, about normalizing conflict and having it be part of conversations as you go forward, so that when those needs change, and that can also be then a topic. Yeah, I've really noticed that my needs have changed around this. And the other person might say, as you said, well, yeah, but I just spent a year, you know, supporting you so you could do this, whatever. And acknowledging and honoring what people have done and naming their needs around that. And then naming your current needs so that it becomes, the conversation goes up, continues. It's not like we get the final version and we're done. Now we got it. But this is going to be an ongoing practice of like recognizing what's happening for us and how we support each other, where frustrations are arising. And if they are, why are they arising? And what's the need under that? So how do we make life better together? And how do we keep track of where we are, so we're not, like you say, functioning on some old model of what we're supposed to be doing for each other, but rather recognizing that we are these fluid beings and we are in constant change.
Yeah, no, that's such a great way to put it and to think, because I think we are programmed a bit to be like, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this to get to the end goal. And now we've made it and now we're here. What do you mean you want to change again? But the thing is, if you're a conscious being that wants to flow through this life, truly honoring yourself and like, you know, being committed to your authenticity, then you will do that for other people. Because if you do it for yourself, you'll hold that space for others. But I think both of you need to, and it might not be a partnership, it could be a work partnership, it could be a friendship, like you just both kind of need to be on that same page of like, this is how I flow through my life and this is how I honor myself and I want to honor you too. So I think it's like a values thing as well, like, you know, how both people operate in the world.
Yeah, and recognizing too that when we agree to something based only on understanding the strategies, like I'll go back to work and you stay home with the kids for a year, you know, let's say that if we don't understand why those things are important to each of us, then it's much easier to get stuck into it. But if we understand what matters to people under that, what concerns they have around it. So as you go into it, you recognize, okay, this is one strategy version of how we go forward. But basically, we're connecting to each other on the level of what we're interested in, what we need, so that then it becomes much easier to shift the particular strategies you choose to work with and bring it back down to like, yeah, that strategy is starting to feel like it's not quite, you know, it's not quite working for us in the same way it did. Let's check back in with what matters to each of us right now, what we're willing and able to do, what decisions are us to make within this, and then think about how we might adapt the strategies that we're using.
And I just love like there's like a why behind the need, because then that allows space for two people to work through the conflict to get to the other side. Because sometimes, you know, things can end just because of like how you talk about strategies. You can just be like, well, we're not aligned, you know, we want different things. And even maybe early on in like when we're trying to assess, maybe in the dating phase or again, work, clients, friends, when we're in the early stage of assessing like how compatible we are for each other, if we just stick with the, as you call Dana, the strategies and like the kind of like, this is what I want and this is what you want, and it's just not matching, it's just not a match, we actually don't get to that deeper place of like, why, what is our need? Why do we have that need? What's the higher significance of that need? And that might actually, you know, like be a match.
Yeah. And it frees us up from getting stuck in a strategy that's divorced from the current needs or interests. And we can really say, like, yeah, that's from, you know, what before. What's happening right now? What is it like? What's alive in us? What's alive in you? And how can we? What does it look like if we move forward with awareness of what's alive in each of us?
And we can actually have these like real conversations before it even gets to the moment of conflict. We can actually just normalize and practice having deeper conversations about needs and what's going on with each other, and like being in that reflective space. It doesn't always have to come out in a conflict.
Yeah, because conflict's just kind of a sort of an end stage communication often. And so all of the stuff we're talking about, like you say, is part of, can be part of communication, how we handle things. When we start a project together, we can be really straight up about what is everybody looking for as they go into this? What concerns do they have? What helps us each when conflict comes up? Let's normalize it. Let's plan for it. So we can plan, expect and plan for conflict, not as like, oh my God, it's going to come, we have to defend ourselves, but okay, this is definitely going to happen. So how will we handle it? What helps you handle it? What helps me? What makes it harder for me? What makes it harder for you? How can we build a conflict culture in our relationships, in our groups, in our communities, in our nations? You know, can you imagine if we had that as a main question internationally? What would help each of us engage in conflict in a constructive way?
Yeah. And then it brings me to that third group that I mentioned with people who just, I mean, because obviously we're talking about healthy conflict here where two people are hearing each other's needs. But there is, I think, a group of people that tend to really love conflict. Like they've made themselves super comfortable having conflicts, and it could be found in hierarchical structures. It could be even found in relationships. And maybe it works when two people are like that, when both people, you know, they just want to like get it out their system and like get to the end of it. And that's how they kind of like release that. But what is going on with that group of people?
Yeah. So again, that's a strategy. And I think it can be really helpful to keep noticing that styles and strategies are not the person. They're just habits.
Okay.
And anybody who's coming into a conflict who's, you know, like yelling, getting it out on the table, like you say, that kind of a style, aggressive style, is a strategy that comes from needs. So also those people have needs and interests. And if, you know, if you come in this, and I think it's a great question you're bringing up, is like, it's not about everybody's going to agree to a certain way of dealing with conflict and we're going to all hold hands and be fine. Because often in conflict, we're not in agreement about how to handle conflict, that some other person might not care about us or care about what we're thinking about conflict, but they always have something that they care about. And that's why they're in the conflict. And so if we develop our own capacity to keep our curiosity, to consciously direct our attention to this level of what matters, then even with those people, it can be, it's the same kind of mechanism is in place. Everybody's there because something matters and everybody wants to be heard. So with people who are diving in, you know, say you're a person who's less likely to dive in like that and the other person dives right in. If you have your spirit oriented toward understanding and having clarity around where you're putting your attention and wanting to understand what's happening around what matters, even there, the conversation can be like, okay, it looks like you're furious about this. I want to better understand what matters to you most here. What's going on for you? What are you thinking? That you direct their attention to that level of what matters, they're much more likely to go there. And then you can also bring yourself in, you know, yeah, and here's what I'm experiencing around this. Here's what matters to me. So that you're not at the mercy of somebody else's style, but rather recognizing that it's a style, you can consciously choose where you, what your decisions are to make. When one of those is, where am I putting my attention? What kind of questions am I offering? Where am I suggesting through what I say and do that we interact right now? So that's a place where there's also a possibility, even though the styles are very different, maybe people have different interests about what the purpose is of the conversation, there still always comes down to this level that people get in there because they care about something and they want to be heard. And the ability to be able to keep your focus on that is really powerful.
Yeah, because it's like focusing on the other person. It's having that, it's not all about, I want to say this. It's like, actually, what do you want to say? And then I'll reflect on that and then respond to that. So yeah, you need to have space within yourself to be able to do that, mm-hmm. as well, because sometimes in the midst of conflict, you can get super triggered sometimes, no matter how evolved we are. Like, we are always going to get triggered. And sometimes we find ourselves getting like worked up or just being like, you know, losing our cool. And then in times like that, do we kind of like, what's your advice? Do we say how we're feeling in the moment? Do we disconnect and come back? Is it just dependent on style?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it depends somewhat on the situation. And one thing can be, let me take a step back. So sometimes if we practice in advance, noticing how we tend to get triggered, that can be really helpful so that you have a practice in place. Like, if someone yells at me, I tend to kind of freeze up and pull back. Okay. Mm-hmm. I know that's likely to happen in the situation I'm moving into, or it's going to happen at some point. What conscious action can I take when that happens? For example, I find it really helpful to come back to the body, because the body is always receiving and registering everything. And so we can also recognize, okay, how is my body when I'm receiving attack? Kind of tightens up. I move back. My chest tightens up. I stop breathing. All right. What do I feel like when I feel really welcome and open? I'm breathing deeply. My eyes widen. My chest feels open. Okay. So I can also access the body's sensation in those moments, because the body can lead the mind. So if you find yourself kind of cramping up and freaking out, you can also come back to yourself and say, okay, how do I feel when I feel open and available? I'm going to step into that physical space so that my mind is less clouded by my physicality, and I can let my physicality lead me. And sometimes you might need to, you know, take a breath and say, I just need a second. I need to get my head together. I'll be back in 2 minutes. How about if we talk about this tomorrow? And also, like we talked about before, letting the emotions be guides instead of problematic, visitors. If you're furious, you might be furious. You might be like, I am so furious, because it's really important to me that when we have an agreement that we are both able to stick to it, and that hasn't been happening, and I feel really frustrated. So that's not a problem. That's a naming of your emotion, a naming of what matters to you, and then of the situation that you've seen. And then to make a request, to get in the habit of, what does it mean to make a real request, which is not a demand, not like get it together and start sticking to the agreement, but I want to understand why this keeps happening. How about if we sit down and look at, you know, what we need to put in place to make sure that any agreements we make, we're both able to stick to? Would you be willing to have that conversation? So that you get used to having all those elements that are inside of you available, and to be able to speak out how your emotions are, what matters to you, what you've observed, what you're curious about in the other person, and what a real request would be.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I was just reflecting on different styles and how, just to work through that, and just kind of reflecting on even me, like, because I'm really transparent about where I am and who I am and all that right now. But I think I'm very good at conflict when someone meets me at a similar level, similar style to me, like when it's like similar tone, working through it in a super respectful way, you know, being very careful. But I just really struggle when someone has a very different style to me. Then I go back into my old ways, like, oh no, I can't, like, I don't want to deal with this. So it's interesting to me, because it's not like I don't want to avoid conflict. It's just I want to avoid a particular style of conflict or a type of person that makes me, like, triggers me in the sense, just it takes more effort sometimes to get through to a person like that, or it takes more on your own, with just within yourself, like just managing your own emotions to get through to people like that. But I guess that's just the second level. There's levels to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you're saying, there can be that sensation of, oh my God, why do I have to do all the work? And at the same time, we can notice, okay, if I stay with my old style, what tends to be the outcome? Is that an outcome I want for my life? If not, I'm going to do this work. Yeah.
It's like getting out of your comfort zone as well, because we can reach a certain point and be like, oh yeah, that's cool. But then we have to keep going.
And, you know, I think one thing that can be helpful that in what you just named is that when someone else has a style that's different than ours, to give ourselves a slight cognitive step back by naming it, by naming their style and saying, okay, their style is to do this and this. Put that outside of yourself so that you are not like in reaction to it, but you're naming it as something that belongs to them. It doesn't belong to you. It's their business, what they do. And that, and I kind of work like theater, I find, in conflict. The more we're able to name things and recognize them as being not inside of us, but something that's outside of us that we can respond to rather than just it being in reaction to. It gives it a slight distancing, which is not being with it, but being with it in a real way, which is that this is not me. I'm in relationship to it, but this person's style is completely their business. And I think that the more we take ourselves out of kind of in like stuck togetherness with things that aren't our business, the more free we can be to be in relationship to those people, even when they're saying things and doing things that we don't agree with.
Yeah. And I like that you said it's not me. And I also want to add, like, it's not also about me. Like, it sometimes when people are showing that level of emotion, like say the person who kind of flies off the handle type of person, in my head, I'm like, I caused that, but that's just my inner child and or whatever's going on. And I'm thinking I caused that level of reaction, but actually it's not about me. It's just that person's style of expressing themselves, expressing their emotions. And I think, like you say, if I just have that space to be like, okay, just remind myself, like, this isn't, it could feel upsetting in that moment, but it's not about me. This isn't towards me, even though something has happened here that has caused this response in that person. And then the other kind of thing that I probably struggle with is it's like either that or fully shut down, just don't want to deal with it. And then the third person that I've kind of encountered recently, because I'm just reflecting, is somebody who tends to I think they get ahead of it before it happens. And it's interesting because I see that as a quite, like it's a healthy thing to do. Like they can maybe see something coming and they want to like get ahead of it before it gets there. But sometimes it can feel like it hasn't happened yet and we're having a conversation about something that hasn't fully happened, and it can feel a little bit like I'm being micromanaged.
Yeah. And I think the difference there is when people start with themselves or if they start with you. So as this kind of practice I'm talking about of doing in advance, really starting with yourself and noticing, okay, I'm feeling this feeling. What is it that I care about? What does that other person care about? Which is different than, hey, I noticed that you're doing this. which is it's kind of an attack demand that's pretending to be curiosity. And so if in ourselves we can practice in advance having a real curiosity about ourselves and others, and when other people come at you with that, that's also just a strategy. You know, and you can acknowledge things without agreeing. So you can say, okay, it sounds like you're curious about this and this. Is that right? You can separate yourself from it. That's their business, what they're doing. You can acknowledge what it is that they're bringing up, and you can be curious about it, which is different than defending yourself against it. And I think that distinction between acknowledgement and agreement is a really powerful thing to practice doing. in all kinds of communications.
And it was interesting because we ended up having a conversation because I felt like I kind of on my last nerve with this, like nothing has fully happened, but you're like micromanaging. And then the conversation I had was just, look, I don't know what kind of day I'm going to have or like how my day is going to end. And sometimes at this time in my life, it's quite a busy period. And if that's layered on top of everything else that's going on, it can feel like, you know, every time I have an interaction with you, it feels like there's a conflict when there isn't a conflict. And we were able to work through it just by honesty. And again, actually, I think it did come back to needs. And my need was like, that person's need was they need to obviously say they don't want to miss anything, like, you know, miss anything that's happening. They also did say it's because I'm, you know, I care and this is why. That helped me be like, okay, this is happening because of that. Yeah. And then I was able to say, okay, well, you know, if I'm having a bad day, I can just let you know that today's not the day right now to be having this conversation. And it was just that kind of renegotiation, which made everything just feel way more comfortable. Whereas before it was like this agitation. So it is possible because I think before I would be like, no, this not compatible. And I'm talking about everything. I'm not talking just about partnership.
Yeah.
But now I want to get to that point where I'm like, actually, let me try with someone who has a different style to me or someone who thinks differently to me. Let's see where we can, because I think this is where we need to actually go as humanity now, like not just stick with the people that we just naturally get along with. We have to, you know, push ourselves out of the comfort zone and really look at people who think different to us, who have different styles of communication to see how can we connect, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. All the polarization that's happening. Oftentimes there's this neuroscience research into the fact that the more polarized people become, the more they believe that they're separate. And they believe that they're far more separate than they actually are. So like you said, with that person, once you got a sense of what they cared about, what mattered to them, then you were like, oh, okay. So then we can develop a strategy that is based on what we both care about. I'll let you know if I'm having a bad day. Okay. Which is different than just fighting about the strategies of how, you know, before you understand. Oftentimes we just never even find out what matters to the person. And then it's really very hard to find strategies that are going to work long term without resentment or, you know, people not getting their needs met.
And yeah, and just going back to like you mentioning, you know, the polarization, it's kind of like, I feel like the more polarized two communities are or two people are, it's actually they need each other. Like we actually need the other person's way of thinking or the other person's perspective to kind of balance things out, like just within us, within the world, within, you know, the communities and stuff. So I think this is the kind of like next level that I'm seeing of people pushing themselves out of their comfort zone, because I can see with spiritual communities and maybe self-improvement communities that people tend to stick to other people like themselves. And then it creates more, like you say, that kind of separation and polarization, which shows up in other ways on the planet, which, yeah, think we need to kind of soften out now.
Yeah. And then when we start getting into really separate groups, we start, it starts to seem like a betrayal to talk across those, you know, perceived borders. And by what I see there is that oftentimes a group can have a sense that, no, you can't talk to those people because they are impossible to talk to. And plus you're giving up, you're betraying our values and reframing it in your own minds. As an individual and as a group, this is not about betraying values. This is about understanding what's going on, having the critical capacity to recognize the overall situation, because we're never only in one part of the world, right? There's weather is not local. It's always connected. And so if we have the critical capacity and the openness of heart, which doesn't mean, you know, being a martyr, it means having like the strength of heart to say, all right, I don't get, obviously these people think this for some reason. I want to better understand this. What would it look like for us to have a conversation that we're both willing to have, first of all? Because that's also a question. How do we set something up so that people feel like it's okay to be there and like there's an actual purpose, that it's not an ambush? And then to ask questions that have to do with like, what does this look like from your perspective? What have you experienced that led you to the way you see things? And then that opens up a whole different field of a level of connection. Again, it's not about the strategies of who should be president or whatever, but it's a level of like, what have you experienced? What was the impact on you? What do you care about now?
Yeah, and that leads me on to my last question is kind of like, I mean, that is great if everybody can have that level of awareness about themselves and that level of intimacy with themselves to even have that conversation. But what do we do if like we are at that place? You know, we can talk about what's led us to be like this, or our childhood experiences or our early experiences, or just be vulnerable. But the other person is just not there yet. Like they are still in that realm of strategy. They're not, they don't even, they can't even access that. In that situation.
Yeah. So developing the ability to ask questions that are not manipulative and to really have the intention in yourself to not be telling the person what's wrong with them. That developing this internal practice of, okay, I'm not sneaking in there with I'm going to pretend to be having a dialogue, but I'm really going to tell them how wrong they are. Changing your internal mindset to, okay, I want to better understand this person. That person wants to be understood. And so while you may not be able to sit down and say, okay, here's the ground rules and here's what we're going to talk about, but that person is coming in there with something they care about. They might be really attached to their strategy, but that strategy is attached to what matters to them. And the more you develop that capacity to be like, okay, so what is it in here that is the most important thing to you that you can keep unfolding it for them essentially, then it's much more likely that you'll get that information. So these kind of things are like throwing out fishing lines. It's not about telling them what to do. It's about having that real curiosity that asks, why does this keep happening? What is this system doing? What's in place that's keeping this polarization happening, for example? Or what have these people experienced that is impacting the way they see this? What does it look like to create a situation where it's possible for us to have a conversation that they would be willing to be part of? And that, so I do a lot of public dialogue work as well. And that is a main question, not like people should have conversation, but what would it look like to have a situation where people see a purpose in having the conversation and they feel willing to do it? And that I think is the work of peacemaking, is the work of conflict engagement, and is the work of us as humans. Like you say, at the moment, there's so much violence and separation that I think this really strong practice of thinking those things and practicing those things internally and with each other is really vital.
Yeah, what a great conversation we've had today. I've learned so much about conflict. You know, there's been some real highlights. My biggest takeaway from this is like realizing conflict is actually not a failure, because, you know, having that in a sentence will help me approach it better. And another one was like needs are not about being needy. And yeah, just so many great takeaways from this. And I know that you do have your book that we're going to put down below, the 17 principles changing the conversation, the 17 principles of conflict resolution, that is in 8 languages. And I know you're writing another book and you've got some cards coming out about your book. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I have my new book is based on 20 questions. So it moves out from the first book, which is looking at what are these basic principles we can think about inside of conflict? And this looks at how do we do that in our daily lives? How do we practice, like we've been talking about, how do we practice consistently in our daily life, recognizing that we're already practicing? So becoming conscious of what we're practicing, what we'd like to practice. And that's coming out hopefully soon. And then I've made a series of decks of cards that go with each book that can be used as contemplation cards or as working cards. So those will hopefully all be coming out in the next month on my website.
Great. And yeah, this interview will probably air around March anyway. So by that time, it will probably be out, and we'll put your website down below, danakaspersen.com. We'll put the book down below, YouTube channel, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Dana, thank you so much for being here with us today, and really wish you the best of luck on your endeavors in 2024.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for being here with us. Your presence here is a gift. To ensure you're always in tune with our latest explorations, subscribe to the Soul Goddess podcast so you're always notified of a new episode. Before we part ways for now, an exciting reminder to claim your free gifts waiting for you in the show notes. These are available for a limited time, and they're crafted with love and intention just for you. Be wild, be free, and forever remain true to your authentic soul self. Until we meet again, sending you so much love and light.